Hello, it's Richard Herring here. Welcome to my podcast feed, powered by Acast Plus. And my stand-up tour is about to begin. Can I have my ball back? First stand-up tour in 6 years. Many of you just know me from the podcast. Don't know, I've done 14 or 15 stand-up tours in my own right. I'm a brilliant stand-up comedian, and can I have my ball back? I think it's my best show ever. That's what the audiences are saying. It's about testicular cancer, but it's funny because testicles are funny even though cancer isn't. I'm really pleased with it. I'd love you to come and see it. Bring your friends. Some of the shows selling really well, some of them selling really badly. It's a traditional Richard Herring tour. But here's where I'm going to be. 2nd of May, Thursday at the Luton Hat Factory. It's a small venue, but there are still tickets left. 3rd of May, I'm at the Bury Hedge End, which is near Southampton. That's looking more full, but still some availability. 8th of May, I'm at the Leicester Square Theatre. There's about 10 tickets left for that one, though I am back at the Leicester Square Theatre in June. And then I'm at St Albans on the 9th, Gloucester on the 10th, Chorley Little Theatre on the 11th. That's sold out, but you can join the waiting list. And then the 12th of May, I'm at Glasgow. Afternoon show sold out. Evening show, extra show, put on, still with tickets. And then there's lots more. Go to richardherring.com/ballback/tour or richardherring.com/gigs. And now, enjoy whatever podcast I've given you. It's free. It's all for you. If you want to pay me back, buy a book, come and see a show. That's all I've got to say to you. Love you.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Cool fact, a crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Also, you can get health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hi there, Richard Herring here, currently appearing in Channel 4's Taskmaster every Thursday at 9 p.m. Welcome to Rahulastapa with wonderful guest Stevie Martin. Not that one. Fantastic improviser, writer, comedian. Really brilliant podcast, this one, I think. I've really enjoyed it. Look, my book, The Problem With Men, is out really soon. 5th of November it comes out, but you can pre-order it now wherever you get your hardback books, your ebooks, or your audiobooks. Please do buy it for yourself, for all your friends, anyone who wants to find out when International Men's Day is. It's funny, it's informative. I think you'll like it. I'm very pleased with it. It'd be nice if it sold some copies, wouldn't it? Apart from that, do check out everything I'm doing on Twitch. Ali and Herring's Twitch are fun Thursday nights, just before Taskmaster, starting at 7:30 at the moment, twitch.tv/RK Herring. I'm also selling some bits and bobs every now and again for charity on eBay, where I'm Herring1967, so do check that out. But before we go in to this week's podcast with Stevie Martin, last week's guest, Michael Ian Black, it's very big of him. We had a slight disagreement about some of his work. It was a little bit awkward. But just apropos of nothing, without me asking, or certainly without me paying him money on Cameo, he has got in touch with a message for you, which I want to share. And then after him, bang, straight into Rahulastapa with Stevie Martin. Over to you. This is very big of you, Michael. I appreciate it. Michael Ian Black apologising.
This is a message for the world and not any particular person who may have a vested interest in me saying these words. But I do want to apologize to the world for my part in writing the utterly charming, witty, and endearing film Run, Fat Boy, Run. I had no business crafting this very sweet tale. Simon Pegg, the star of it, had no business lending a hand in sharpening the screenplay and making it even better than it already was. David Schwimmer, the talented actor and director, had no business seeing this project brought to life, and the incredible actress Thandie Newton certainly should not have portrayed her part with such grace and elegance. But it's really my part as the conceptualizer and writer and visionary, original visionary for the project, who I feel like just owes you, the world, an apology. It was thoughtless of me to write a winning comedy that also has a good deal of heart. And I apologize to you, the world, for inflicting this darling romantic comedy on all of you. And just so you know, I'm in a parking garage right now in Connecticut, and I'm going to jump off of it.
Hello, my God. Please welcome a man who's been struggling with cupboards all week and now struggling with technology. It's Richard Herring. Hello. I think we're going. I hope we're there. I'm just going to check Twitch to check it's all working. Yes, I can see myself. Hello, we're here. Welcome to another episode of Richard Herring's Last Stranger Things podcast. It's the last page of the Stranger Things book. We filled it up. You know what? It's almost been exactly a year. It's falling apart. It started on the 11th of October, 2019. It's the 7th of October, 2019, I think. So just short of a year this thing has lasted. All the guests, who would have guessed a year ago that we'd have ended up talking to people in America, done half this book through live podcast. It's got Grayson Perry's autograph in there. It's got a little doodle he's done. That's got to be worth a lot of money, right? That's got to be worth tens of thousands of pounds. It's got Charlie Brooker. It's got all sorts. And what I do with these books, they're struggling to cut. There you go, look at that. I tend to eBay them off. I think I might eBay this one off for charity because it's got the work of a famous artist in it. So watch out for the eBay. We might eBay some other stuff as well. But I was talking to Emmanuel Charpentier and Jennifer Doudna the other day. They're the winners of the Nobel Prize for Chemistry for inventing genetic scissors. I mean, it sounds like they're evil mad women to me, but they look nice, don't they? They're trying to change all your DNA to make it better in some way. Anyway, they call it RALISPR. I don't know if that's going to catch on. I wasn't talking to... Oh, hold on. No, that's later. I wasn't talking to Sir Roger Penrose, though. He won the Nobel Prize for Physics for drawing a big cock on a blackboard. Look at that. That's just... If you're giving out Nobel Prize for Physics for drawing cocks on blackboards, you owe me about 325,317 Nobel Prizes. He hasn't even done a good job. The balls... If that's meant to be a vagina with a penis going, and the balls are wrapped, they're kind of got caught in the labia. And that is not right. You shouldn't be putting your balls in there anyway, Sir Roger Penrose. If they give you Nobel Prizes for that, I think that's disgusting. So I've had quite a week. I've been recording my audio book this week, The Problem with Men. And that is available to pre-order wherever you pre-order your books, on book, hardback book, ebook, and audiobook. And there's lots of extras on the audiobook. I did a big extra podcast with Deborah Francis White, which I think you'll find very interesting. Alistair Green was along to be the voice of the International Men's Day. It was a lot of fun. So do pre-order that if you can. Do subscribe to Twitch, especially if you're with Amazon Prime. Link your Amazon Prime and Amazon Gaming accounts. But the big news this week, what I spent most of my week doing, is attempting to get into a cupboard in my kitchen. It became stuck. It's a carousel cupboard in the corner, and if sometimes I put pans in there, which I accept now is probably an error. I'm in the Albert Hall, by the way, for people listening at home, or lots of people are cheering me. It's great. And pan handles can get caught, and
stop the thing spinning around. Usually you can open it enough to be able to fiddle it around and jostle it and they'll come loose. This time that didn't happen. It was deep in there. I could only open the door a crack. That's the crack I could get through. I could barely see. I could use a tiny torch and shine it in there and I could see what was inside this half of the cupboard. There's all the other side on the other half. It was like a very shit discovery of King Tutankhamun's tomb where there were some cheese graters and a colander in there. I could just see a pan with its handle against the side, but it was very difficult to get anything in there that was both flexible enough because it had to bend around a bit to get underneath the pan handle, but also solid enough that it had some purchase on it. And my, oh my, did I have a time. I tried a coat hook. Obviously, everyone on Twitter suggested coat hook. An unraveled coat hook. That's not called coat hanger. That's what they're called. And I tried some bamboo from the garden. Then the best thing I got was some fresh bamboo that hadn't solidified. That moved it a little bit, got a little bit further. I went to a DIY shop in Hitchin and I bought a curtain rod, which just broke. I bought this. But look, that's not going to get in that tiny gap, is it? Look at that tiny gap and look at that. It's not going to work. That's one of the... I bought it because I thought, well, it might do it. And also, it's what it is, if you're listening on the audio, is one of those picker-up things that old people use to pick things up so they don't have to bend down. But I thought it's a good excuse to buy one of those without accepting that I'm old. And I found it very useful for lots of things. We'll come back to it. It was a good buy. And that I knew it wouldn't work, but I thought, let's buy it anyway. And then if anyone says, where'd you get that? I go, oh, I had to open a carousel cupboard. It became a big Twitter thing. People were suggesting stuff on Twitter. I was hitting it. I was kicking it. I was getting very frustrated. Finally, I got it just open enough to get that clipper in and opened up. It was the best day of my life. I got married. I've had two kids. The elation I felt after 26 hours of trying to open that cupboard, it was intense. It was the most wonderful thing I've ever seen. I had a headache beforehand. It was all better. It all went well. But anyway, that was my day. But a lot of people were surprised when I opened it up. I should say that there it is to prove it. I used that. I reached in with this, managed to get it through, boom, and then grabbed and then managed to pull it. That I have two cheese graters. That was the big story on. Things are going well for me. Okay, I've got two cheese graters. I've got a cheese grater and an emergency cheese grater. Because what if you lose your cheese grater or one of your cheese graters is in the dishwasher and it's going and you need to grate something, you need another grater. So my mistake was to put my emergency grater in the same cupboard as my actual grater. And that's why the royal family never travel in the same plane. It's the same thing. So I'm now going to keep them. They are currently in the same cupboard. Once I opened it, I did immediately shut it and jingle it around again to see if I could trap it again. It was so much fun getting out there. I haven't done much in my life, and that I thought my wife would be really pleased, but she was, if anything, cross with me for doing it because she had been trying to do it and she hadn't done it. And although when you're married, you are aiming for your goals are the same. It's still just a competition. You're competing against each other to do the same thing, and if one of you achieves it, the other one is annoyed. And that is the beauty of marriage, my friends. It's a comp. Don't let anyone tell you it's a union. It's a competition all the way. Lots of people said we should keep our cans in there, not our pans, because they won't. Then it won't happen. And that makes sense because there's a lot of wasted room in there with pans in. But my wife's not going to. She's not going to concede that. Anyway, you've had a little glimpse into my private life there. How many cheese graters is too much? There's a Maggi mix up there as well. That can grate stuff as well. I've basically got three. I wouldn't use the Maggi mix because I don't know how to use it. But also, it takes a lot of cleaning. They're good, though, but, you never use them because they take a lot of cleaning. Anyway, look, enough of that. Buy my book. Do your Twitch. Remember to come back and subscribe with Twitch Prime if you're doing that. I don't want you spending any of your actual money on this, but it'd be lovely if you would spend Ian Amazon's money on this. My guest this week... is probably best known for her appearance on So Beano. That is why we're all here today to see that. Ladies and gentlemen, will you please welcome the amazing Stevie Martin. There she is.
Hello.
How are you? Hello. Good to see you. Cheers to you as well. Look, my drink's got people on it because it's green.
Mine doesn't but I did just pour it, the other one, all over myself.
Yes, we've had quite a time in the right. We were going to do our little backstage interview, then the tech went wrong, and you spilt a whole glass of wine on yourself.
Yeah. So like duvet, all my outfit, which was all white, all white outfit, like a Backstreet Boy. All my outfits ruined. I probably lost the deposit on the flat. probably my boyfriend's probably broken up with me. Yeah.
It was good. We did, when I came back to you, you were just discussing Vanish with your boyfriend. He was about to put it in the washing machine. You were going, no, you've got to leave it to soak for 6 hours. It's a competition. A relationship is a competition. It's not, you're working for the same thing. But
and I won that one despite having poured the wine because I knew what to do with the Vanish. So in a way, that is 2-0.
That is. Well done. Congratulations. What do you remember about your appearance on Sobino? And can you tell people who don't know what Sobino is?
Can't believe out of all the things that's so actually that was actually one of my favorite
good
it's one of my favorite jobs Richard one of my favorite acting jobs. I don't get many of them. I mainly do you probably will know me best for Woman One, Woman Two, Girl One, Girl Two, in anything. But Sobino was great because it's a kids show, which means that at any point that we wrote, I've got two writing, is it a partner if it's two, a triage nurses that I work with. And I used to be in a sketch group with them, and then we now sort of write together. And we got to write just loads of sketches for kids, given a theme. And what's so great is that the moment you're like, oh, I need like a clever punchline, no, you don't, just do a big fart. And then
it's true.
It's so
and that
good.
Works for adults as well. It works for adults as well.
It should do, but they don't. The commissioners don't like it. So it was absolutely. I just did this face. This is like my face, and then they'd put a fart soundtrack on it. It was like this. Yeah. Thank you.
You do the best faces, I have to say. You're a very naturalistic actor in your sketches. But what I and when I did, we'll talk about this later as well. But when I did your Twitch channel, it's a. You know, it's a character you're performing, but when you make noises and pull faces, it comes out every now and again, and it's one of the funniest things I've ever seen. You're just the master or the mistress of the funny face with an unusual sound, I would say. So if it's a fart, even better. But
so kind. No one's
ever
done that before.
The number of times you've made me laugh today with just a stupid face and go, I can't do it as well as you. I don't know how I dared to do that in front of you when you're the master/mistress.
That was terrible, actually. I'm really embarrassed for you.
Yeah, I'm embarrassed for myself. How many cheese graters do you have in your abode?
Yeah, I was thinking about this. So I've got one, which is to my shame, but it's one that I don't need to buy another one because it's the one where it's like a tub and the grater is the lid. So
that's good.
And it falls within. But I do have two garlic presses. So
I just want to say... I've got one of those as well. I've got four graters. I've realised now I've got one of those.
Absolutely.
I don't really use it. I don't really use that one, but there we do have the capacity to use that one.
Why don't you use that one? That's the only one.
I did use it for a bit, and then I've got two graters. You come together in a relationship. You both bring a grater, and that's two graters, and then other graters come in. Two garlic presses. Is that because you weren't happy with the performance of the? I would say I've got probably two at the moment. I've had more than two in my life of garlic presses. One of them's the rolly. Have you got one that's a rolling
what?
Pin?
What?
But
that's
that's
a rolling pin. That's
yeah, no, but it's like a it's only about that long, and it's specially made for garlic. It's got like I would go down and get it, but it will take a bit too long.
Yes.
I'll show it next week. It's got like little ridges on it, so it's made for rolling garlic, but it crushes it. But you get big bits of garlic. And then I've got one that's a bit harder to clean. The good thing about the rolly one, easy to clean.
Yeah, that's the thing that I can't stand about my garlic presses because they're both the ones that are difficult to clean. But I can't stand cleaning it because then you just put garlic in it again. Like, it's not like the garlic taste is going to affect anything. So that I can't get my head around it. And I get very angry. Also, when you have to clean it, sometimes I have to, like, scrape it with my finger. And then you get, like, garlic finger.
That's true.
Awful. And it stays for 2 weeks.
I quite like big chunks of garlic. And in, is it Goodfellas or The Godfather where the guy's slicing up garlic with a little...
I think about that every time I do. I'm like, because he does it, he like shaves it.
Yeah, and it's amazing.
I can't be bothered with that. But like, I'd like to be bothered with that, like massively.
That's the best bit of that film, that classic film. Good. So we'll cover that. Maybe when you're a bit more successful, you'll have four ways to great things like I am. That's what I'm just saying. I've done. My life's gone pretty well. People are a bit jealous. I think people thought the whole cupboard thing was just a ruse to just show how many graders I had. And things are going pretty. What can I say? Things are going pretty well.
Well, I'm already very jealous of you because you have the thing that I crave and covet the most, which is a place to work that is not your bed. So if I had had an office, this wine thing would not have ruined my life.
That's true.
Just tipped over. Like, oh, nightmare.
You've got to be careful. You've got to be careful with booze. So let's talk about the elephant in the room. Are you ever confused with Stevie Martin, who writes about Brighton's Knocker Boys? Are you ever confused with him?
Who's that?
There's another Stevie Martin. He lives in Brighton. He writes about Knocker Boys. I didn't want to look up and see what Knocker Boys were. I have a feeling they were probably some sort of Teddy Boys or maybe the guy. So there used to be guys who used to wake you up by knocking on the windows and stuff, wasn't it? I don't know if those are Knocker Boys, but Knocker Boys, it's better left to the imagination.
Yeah, it just Brighton's sounds like boys that like knockers.
Just boys. That's just all.
Some boys.
Most boys. 80% boys. Of boys.
That's the statistic. I thought you were going to do the thing that everyone does, which is say what? Steve Martin. And I'm so bored of that. Yeah, he's an actor. I often get confused by him. It's really helped me in my career when people are trying to find, it's just, he just comes up when you, I can't Google myself, which is really nice because it's just, he just comes up. No, I haven't. He's written a book. I'm very jealous of people who've written books. So, maybe I should get
I think he's trying to write a sitcom about it. All I've found about him, and he did come up on more or less the first page of Google when I put Stevie Martin. Maybe it was, I put Stevie Martin interview in, as I do to try and get little tidbits that I can work on. And then I thought, this is interesting, local author. And I thought, maybe she lives in Brighton. And then I looked at that, doesn't look like the Stevie Martin I remember. I wonder if he's confused for you. It must be annoying for him that you've shown up. He's a little older than you. And he must have been thinking, at least I'm the only Steve Martin in the UK. And I've called myself Stevie. And then you turn up and ruin that.
I totally ruined that. Yeah, well, the thing is with interviews, I don't really do many interviews. I used to be a journalist, so I would interview lots of people. So I find it really weird being interviewed because that was my day job for so long. I feel like, I'm actually really surprised I've not heard of Stevie.
I'm amazed you haven't. Yeah. You're just so obsessed with the other Steve Martin.
Well, I don't Google myself, Richard, because I'm not a prick.
Should. I've Googled you a lot. I Google myself a lot. It's a bad thing to do to Google yourself. It's horrible.
Well, I don't have enough. There's nothing there.
I imagine you're fine. I found plenty of stuff. Don't you worry. And do you ever get Steve Martin's job offers, or do people ever email you thinking you're Steve Martin?
No, but I did actually, and this, it was almost too neat. It was, I did a preview for my Edinburgh show last year, and at a place in London, and they put Steve Martin on the poster, on everything. And what was so fascinating was, obviously, when the person is writing out Steve Martin, do they not think to be like, shall I check if it's him? Because I'll probably put it more front and centre of his. But they didn't. So it just looked like Steve Martin was just like casually rocking up and doing. And it was sold out. They weren't that interested in what I was saying.
You should use it more. You should use it to your advantage. Do that. Were you not tempted to go with a different name?
Well, when I was in the womb, there was a lot of arguments happening. I wanted to be called Tracy. And my mum was just like, no, I love the jerk. So
You're allowed to change your own name. You can change your own name now as a grown.
Yeah. Oh, sorry, I didn't realize.
Many people do that for that reason, that they don't want to be mistaken. If I was called... I can't think of anyone who had
Nicole Kidman.
Nicolai Kidman, but it was spelt Nicole. I would probably think about. No, I would definitely keep that. In fact, I'm changing it to Nicolai Kidman. That's what I'm going to call it from now on.
To Nicole, just back yourself. I had a lot of obviously, you can imagine when you're a very small child girl in the 90s and you're like, my name's Stevie. And everyone in the playground is like, are you a boy? And you are very bored of that. Or, but as a child, you don't have that kind of self-consciousness element. Oh, no, sorry, you don't have the self-awareness. You have the self-consciousness massively. But now I quite like it because it is actually a talking point. I'm very bad at small talk, and it's quite a talking point at parties for very low bar conversations.
Well, I think you should do a show called The Jerky, because that's like putting an E in the jerky.
I should.
And then it's like Stevie Martin, The Jerky.
Thank you. Thank you. That's okay, so Edinburgh 2022 sorted. Yes.
Yeah. Oh, that 2022 might happen. I think 2020.
I'm not going to 2021. It'll be too full and I can't be bothered.
Oh, I think it'll be super empty. I don't think it'll happen. And I think no one will be able to afford to go.
But it'll be all the it'll be yourself. You could do it. It'll be it'll be people who are quite established or people who are like the hot newcomers, the sexy newcomers. So very sexy people and very established people.
Sounds great. Like a dangerous cocktail to me. What
sounds
a dangerous
like a great festival. You don't have to say shit. That's good.
Good. All right. Well, look, there's lots of things to talk about. You are quite high. I don't know where you were born, which I usually manage to find out from the internet. So it is quite hard to find out stuff about you. Mm-hmm. I'm presuming the north of England.
Why? Yes. I was born in Liverpool. I've lost my accent. I won't be taking any questions.
Lost it. I'd have taken you over. I'd have said you were more my neck of the woods, somewhere around Yorkshire, possibly. I mean,
no, grew up in northwest Cheshire. Right. So that, which is sort of like nondescript. That's like nondescript north that no one can ever place. But not in the, I'm just being very clear, not in the posh part, because then people, no, it's not bad to be posh, but I often am like, oh, it's Cheshire. No, there's shithole in it, in Cheshire. Okay. Cheshire's arsehole. That's where I'm from.
Okay. And then you went to Durham University. I mean, not straight away. You lived till you were presumably 17 or 18 and went to...
Came out and into the northeast.
I know Durham University is pretty easy to get into, so you may have been a baby.
So easy.
And you started, you were doing English literature, I know that. And you did comedy, you know, in the Durham Review. Oh, well done to Durham Review for still going. I can't believe it's still going.
I go and see them every year. I got auditioned by Nish Kumar, Ed Gamble, Tom Neenan, Dream Team.
Wow, there was more. Good.
Katie Barker, excellent woman, is no longer in comedy. But those three. And also someone called Pete, I've forgotten his last name. He was so good. And then he became an academic. Lovely for him. But I had no interest in doing that. But I was very drunk and then went. Nish Kumar changed my life.
Wow. I knew those guys were all from there. I hadn't made that connection. I didn't realize it was the same time period. Okay, good.
Here we are.
But you went off to be a journalist, but you saw the other Durham Review guys doing okay, and you thought they were shit. I'm going to go back and they can do it.
Ed, terrible. Shit. Here I come. Age 32, still not quite eclipse them. Might do.
Plenty of time.
Playtime, so much time. Yes, I didn't. It was really weird because when I was in Durham, I didn't really like my degree. Found it very pretentious, and thought. But then, didn't really want to do comedy or anything. I'd never been on stage. No interest in it. Got drunk, and my friend opposite me in the hall had a boyfriend who was in it and was like, "Oh, you should do it." And then they took me there, and I just sort of was drunk and being silly. And then Ed Gamble let me into the Durham Review. And I remember very vividly the first time we all like met up, and it was like, bring some funny things. I was like, I can't do it. So I was silent for like a year. I didn't do anything. I was terrified. And then didn't think ever that comedy could be a career and it sounds very trite saying it, but I did not think that comedy could, I didn't even consider it because all of the guys did comedy, but there were very few girls doing comedy from Durham. So I was just like, oh, and then I formed a sketch group with two girls who were in the Durham Review years after I'd like trained to be a journalist and then been like, and then like also been a I was a comedy reviewer, which has not helped me.
Oh, were you?
I edited Fest magazine in Edinburgh.
Did you? My goodness. Do you ever review me?
No, I saw, but I've said this to you before. I saw that one of the first comedy show I ever saw in Edinburgh was The Teacher's Son.
Headmaster's Son. It's a very memorable title. That's okay.
But it was a memorable show. I loved it so much. And that was, yeah, that was when I was in the Durham Review. And it was that thing where you don't realise, if you kind of have an idea of what you want to do, but you're too scared, that you tend to, I've tended to kind of like circle around it and be like, well, I'm a writer, but I could never be on stage. So I will just rip the shit out of people who I will now. And I still do, like, I had a very nice conversation with someone the other day who I was like, I'm really sorry in 2012 I gave you 3 stars. And they were like, I've thought about that for years. I really shot myself in the foot.
Yeah.
Really did. But.
Well, fine. Fern Brady was also a journalist and I think a comedy reviewer as well, who changed sides. So it's very, well, you should keep it quiet. That's changed my whole opinion of you.
Yeah, well, that's why I don't spread it about. That's why I didn't know.
the sketch group, like, I'd not seen any. I mean, I think I'd caught some of your sketches without knowing who you necessarily were, you guys. So I had seen a couple of bits and pieces. Massive Dad. Is that the name of the sketch group? You suddenly look like it wasn't. Yes, it is. And I've watched loads today, and it looks like you had a TV show because there's these very professionally produced sketches. But did you just do those yourself, or did someone pay you to do this?
We got really close a lot of times, and that broke my heart.
But there's loads of really amazingly shot sketches, like properly produced sketches. So were those from a pilot, or did you put those together yourself for a pilot?
So we did a product. They were on. They were shot on the camera that was the same camera that shot Skyfall.
Okay.
I don't know what that. I've never done that in my life. So we worked with a production company called Monkey Kingdom, who are brilliant. Were brilliant. I've not spoken to them for a bit, but they're great. And the idea was that we would do put together these sketches. They'd be like, oh, they look great, and then they would like make them into a show. And then there was like a very short window where it was like we need women in comedy. And then we had about 6 months of really gunning for it, and then it was like, no, we don't want that anymore. And then that was the end of that. We had a really lovely, in retrospect, time of getting like so close. And also we got a series, and then the person at Channel 4 changed, so then we lost the series.
Yeah, that's basically my last 30 years.
Oh, God, man, I don't know how you do it. Like, I only realise now that my heart was broken. And now I have a nice time because I now make my own stuff, but it's so hard to get over that thing. But yeah, and we're actually doing a little cameo in someone's show next week that's going to be on BBC or something, and it's nice to kind of meet up with them again and do a little bit of filming with them again, because we didn't split acrimoniously at all. We still are all really great friends, and I do a podcast with one of them, and I'm great mates with the other. But it was sad that it didn't work out. It's really sad.
Yeah, well, it's, you know, there's so many things like that. There's so much luck down the way as to the things that get that far. You know, I've talked about this a lot, but things like The Office. You know, it wasn't until it was repeated that it sort of became, and it was only repeated because of something like the Olympics being cancelled or something, that it became a big thing. So there's, even when you get that far, there's so much chance and luck, and, you know, and good things will come out, I think. But
absolutely.
There was some great sketch. I really like the sketch about the brooch, where you're interviewing the girl with the brooch. I love that one. The Andrew Sisters one is very funny as well. There's some great stuff. It's all on, there's a Massive Dad website, and you can see all, I think pretty much there's 8 or 9 sketches on there. They're very beautifully shot and acted, and some good funny faces in them as well. So check them out.
I try to just squeeze a face in where I can, where it's needed.
It's good. It's perfectly timed. You know, a funny face. You just have to ask my daughter, who's already a very stern comedy critic, and it doesn't cut the mustard. You can't pull funny faces all the time, but every now and again. I made her laugh today, and, you know, that's about the first time in a month I've made her laugh. And it was partly through, I think it was a funny fact. I can't remember. Have I not noted it down? I'm going to ask you an emergency question. I'll go old school. You're the last person in my book with Grace and Perry. You're in with Grace and Perry. Oh. Usually I'd get you to sign this, but it's not possible in the current environment. Okay, question number two. If you had to have sex with an animal, if you had to, I don't think you'd want to, if you had to, which animal would you choose and why? It can be a specific one or a breed or a species. You know, if there's one you particularly fancy over the others.
No, I do know.
Yeah.
It would be, for two reasons, a pangolin. You know, pangolin? Mm. So reason one is they look very polite.
Okay.
Reason two is that they are apparently, whenever I see an animal that I don't really know, and I'm like, they're so cute. Then you find out that they've been horribly trafficked or something. They're like the most trafficked animal. They need a bit of joy because they're the most trafficked animal, I think, the most trafficked exotic animal. So I could give them a good old time.
Okay. They are, when it's all, it's almost like an alien. It looks sort of half a snake, that, sort of like an armadillo.
Yeah, but like you're not giving, they're like this. But they've got like a nice little,
but
know?
I think I think it's a good choice because it takes it beyond bestiality to something you could imagine. Oh, this is an alien's come down from another planet. They've said, unless we can breed with your best human female, we will destroy the planet. And then you can go, okay, I'll do this just for, you know, to save the planet Earth. And that's quite a sexy story. I might use that later.
Thrilled.
I might change to a pangolin. Mine's the Okapi, which is just because it looks like a, it's an Okapi. It's like, it's got zebra markings, but it's like a horse.
Oh, yes, I know. Oh, they're beautiful. I've just Googled it. Yeah. Beautiful.
Yeah.
Oh, so you've gone for looks over trying to give someone a good time.
Long tongue from behind. If you were just in behind, you could imagine it was a lady. That's all I was saying. Or a gentleman, if you prefer. A new Okapi has been born in London Zoo recently. I got an email about it. I don't know if it was just to me specifically, but I want London Zoo to know I'm only interested in adult Okapis. So please email me when that Okapi is... Only if I have to have sex with an animal would I choose an Okapi. I don't want to have sex with it, but if I had to, I'm round to London Zoo, adult Okapis only.
Because I want the younger pangolins, the better, just if you can spread that out.
I think okay. I think once you've crossed the line into bestiality, all bets are off, really.
Have sex with an egg. Why not?
Yeah, that's okay. That is actually okay.
It's fine.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Have you ever seen a ghost, Stevie Martin?
That's a really great question. Also, I've got a friend who is in the series of Ghosts, and he did a press tour and he said every single journalist started with, have you ever seen Ghosts? And then I read all his interviews and every interview starts with that. No, I haven't. Absolutely desperate to. But my dad has a really good ghost story, and he's a really cynical, like, scouse, like, ghosts of bullshit. But he's like, ghosts of bullshit. But apart from this one time... basically, very quickly, because very boring to hear other people's stories about ghosts. Sure.
It is not. That's why I asked the question. It's very interesting.
Of course. Sorry, I forgot. Don't like talking about myself or my life. So my dad is a session drummer. That's his job. And he was working in a studio.
He's session drum for Anton Deck. I just want people to know that before.
He did. And that was when I was... People who are not of my age do not realise the importance of being 9 years old and PJ and Duncan, let's get ready to rumble. Your dad, he also did Peter Andre. He did Peter Andre. He did drums for him. He just had a relationship with him. Oh my God, please don't clip that. Right. So he was doing something and there was some sort of music thing. I don't talk to him about that business. And he was working in a studio that was underground and used to be like an old Victorian lunatic asylum, but I'm absolutely making it up. But he said it felt like a very weird thing. Anyway, there's these huge doors, like massive, massive doors that you have to open and close. And in the studio, no music, but essentially you have to like open the door in order to put the power on. The power can't be playing when the door is closed. And they go down. And they go, and there's all these like huge slabby doors. I'm not doing it. I'm really bad at telling stories, but I hope that the sentiment remains. They go to the studio. There is music playing inside the room, and the guy's like, "That doesn't make any sense." And then he opens the door, and all of the power's off. There's no music. Like, there's no way that any music could play. And he was like that. And then my granddad used to be a grenadier guard in Buckingham Palace. And he said he saw a ghost walking up and down the ramparts.
Wow.
All I'm saying is, ghosts are real. That's what I'm saying.
Could be real.
Could be real.
It's my way of telling if someone's crazy or not, if they've seen a ghost. So you've passed.
But my granddad and my dad have failed. Great. Cool.
That is quite exciting. But you have experimented with witchcraft.
Oh, I have.
Yeah, see, I know everything about you.
Also, this is a Nostradamus T-shirt. That
I'm
is
a big
by,
fan of Nostradamus.
But it's called, the brand is called like the Occult Club. Like,
okay.
Yeah, it's my vibe.
So tell us about being a witch.
Oh, I'm not, well, oh, actually, okay.
You've done a spell that worked.
This spell, I had a period of time, so Elle Magazine, so when I used to be a journalist, I used to work for everyone who would pay me money, obviously, and one of them were intended to be women's magazines because I'm a woman and magazines exist. And so I did one article for Elle Magazine where they like sent me to get my flat spiritually cleansed or something, and then after that everyone was like, oh, Stevie will write about paganism. But then I had this one, oh my God, so I did this one. So there's two things. The thing that I think you've seen is the one on Vice magazine where I did Halloween spells, but the thing that led to that is more interesting because that is an article of Elle Magazine about witchcraft and the rise of witchcraft.
That's the one I read.
Is the one you read? Great. Yeah. So that was, I'm so sorry for thinking that it was the Vice one that you'd read. how crude of me. That article was about like the rise of how people are more interested in things like tarot readings and whatever, but it doesn't really show how fun it was to research that, because essentially what I did was I found these three witches who were like also really successful women in their respective fields. One was like a music producer, I've forgotten, it was so long ago, but they're like, I know it sounds terrible because who cares, but they also were like very professional women in a field that people who are not interested in paganism would respect. And we went to this, I was expecting an interview sort of thing, so we had a little dictaphone and whatever, turned up at this pub, and I ended up basically drinking like three bottles of wine and getting absolutely bloated with these three like full witches who were like the high priestesses of various covens of Elephant and Castle and Brixton, and like, and they told me all this, and it was the most fun night. It was wonderful. They were, and also what was great about it was they were really cool. They weren't what I imagine, and I think what people often want to read about that is like, it's silly and lame. They were just really like, oh, it's all about just, you know, helping people and about the fact that we're all really connected. And then we're also like, and also I'm high priestess. I was like, tell me more about that. Like, it was so, so great. So I have some tarot cards, and I occasionally will like whip them out occasionally, but I want to believe in it more than I do. Saturday.
Yeah, I have my tarot cards read for an upcoming TV show that I'm in. It's Taskmaster.
Taskmaster.
Yeah.
It's such a great
show. I had to do something that I wouldn't usually do. So I had my tarot cards read online because it was obviously during lockdown that we did that one. I mean, I won't say too much about it. She did say that me and my wife were, that I wasn't in with both feet with my wife. And I said, don't tell my wife that because that's quite, you know, we're married.
She's going to go out on national television.
Yeah. Right. And it is. That's the bit they obviously chose to show on
the TV. Well, the thing is that, like, so I also did a piece for Elle magazine, which was about getting my, well, I actually never came out, which is about, I think, getting my aura read. And I went to this shop in Covent Garden called Mysteries. And it's like a very, it's a pagan shop. And in the, again, the whole thing was about how, like, women and people are getting their auras read and all that thing. Like, we're all interested in that loads or whatever. Went upstairs and there was, like, the waiting room was full. Loads of different types of people all waiting to get their aura read. And then when the guy read my aura, I was so disappointed because he was like, you will have a great career in mathematics. I can't add up. I'm so... And it was really, like... Because it was like, oh, you were so close to getting it. Like, it went, like, crazy. Because basically, you had to hold this thing that looked like a very metal knob, and then on his computer screen, which looked like a Windows 95 old computer that he had found from the past, which had my face, and then all of these like colors going around it, and it went like creative. At one point, it was like creative, and I was like, yeah, and then it went mathematical. And he went done. And I was like, no, you fucked it, mate. Like, it was so bad.
I like it when they use technology. I had a girlfriend a while, 20 years ago, who was like into that hippie stuff. And we went to a health farm, and then we did a few things. I did Tai Chi with a woman who could see, our spirit guide, who was a Native American, which I was embarrassed about, but we shared them. We'd been waiting to get together, apparently, and he'd done it. He was really pleased, but, you know, it was a very bad relationship and ended badly. So I presume that was some kind of revenge for what my culture and civilization has done to his, which was what I would do if I was a Native American spirit guide. But I also did a thing where they tested allergies by making you hold glass vials full of substances, and then they passed an electric current through it, and then that would tell you if you're allergic to the thing.
Oh, my God.
And glass doesn't conduct electricity, so that doesn't really matter what's inside the vial. But I was basically allergic to everything I like is what they told me, basically.
But that, apparently those things that you can do now where you, like, send your own hair, I send my own blood. And they tell you, like, oh, you're allergic to stuff. I got told that too. Apparently there's no science behind it at all. So obviously, of course, a glass vial is ridiculous.
But I like when they try to make it sciencey. So it's great when they go, look, we've got this electric current and with this, and then we're going to do this, and it's science. And then it is, if you know anything about science. But that's good. It's fun. It's showmanship.
It is fun. And I think as well, what I have learned, which is very nice, and I did learn this through my time of writing consistently about the pagan way, is that very simply, like, if you it's like psychological tricks. So if you focus your brain on wanting something, it just means that on a day-to-day basis, your brain will then work towards that thing. So it actually does kind of work, but often, sometimes not in the way that it's not like a little fairy doing it.
Well, if you're open to stuff, that's it, because I think it's a therapy thing, really, isn't it? So it was, I very much enjoyed talking to this lady in online, and I, you know, she knew I was skeptical, and but it was still just nice to talk to someone. I think that's what you get someone, you talk to someone.
Yeah,
about stuff. They take a few punts on things. She goes, no, I think I'm going all right with my wife. She did, like, really double down on it. I said, no, I think, you know, don't tell her, I think it's going okay. But nah, there's something going on there.
No, it's not going okay. Oh, shit.
But, you know, then she maybe knew about the competition thing that I have with my, you know, like, it's become a competition with me and my wife. So
that's fair enough.
I think it's going okay. You know, we've been together for, like, nearly 13 years. It's an insane length of time. In Richard Herring years, that's about 40, 50 years as well. I've never had a relationship that lasted longer than 2 years before. So this is crazy.
Oh, wow. She's the keeper.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, she is. I mean, it's too late now. I'm very old. She might leave me and then I'm fucked. But I'm not going anywhere. I can tell you that now. I'm not. My feet I'm not out with both feet. I'm so in with both feet that whatever happens, I'm not fucking going anywhere. What, she can do anything she wants.
If she leaves you, she'll take your feet with her.
Like, yeah, I've got my feet in, and I'm going, nope, this is, you're stuck with me. It's not going to be long till I die. Just wait until I die, and then you can do what you like. That's my feeling. I love my wife very deeply. That was interesting. But in the article you talked about when you were a teenager, you lit a candle for your dog.
She got better. I was very heavily bullied at school. So really, really badly bullied at school. It was very sad. And I became obsessed with shows like Buffy the Vampire Slayer and things that would be like, there's a very hot woman, but like still a woman who's like, you know, killing things, essentially really a lot of like pent up energy. And so that I basically between like 13 and 15, maybe 12 and 15, my parents were very worried about the amount of herbs disappearing from their cupboard. Let's just say that. The amount of candles. And there was a lot of discussions about like, is Stevie okay? Is she a Satanist? She seems to have built an altar in her room. And I'm like, it's okay. It's about the Earth Goddess. Lovely. And then I discovered drinking. And then that very much was fine. I discovered a lot of fun when I'm drinking, so then I didn't have to do any spells anymore, which probably is actually worse. But yeah, so I was actually a full pagan for 3 years.
That's amazing. But then, you know, you did cure your dog, so that's good. With that man with a candle.
I did cure my dog. I brought
that can't be positive thinking. The dog doesn't understand about positive thinking. Maybe you're just so calm around the dog. Maybe the dog was stressed because you were being bullied, and then the candle made you calm. That's what happened. That's what they reckon with Rasputin and the Alexei, who was the haemophiliac son of Tsar Nicholas that Rasputin was looking after. That's why he became the center of power. And they reckon he was just a calming effect on the mother, in fact, who was very stressed by the fact her son could die at any second. And that when the mother calmed down, the son calmed down and then was less likely to have haemophilic episodes.
Well, that's quite a lot of those things. That's the kind of what I just sort of mentioned before about how, like, it doesn't really matter how you get to the thing. If it has a positive effect, who cares? Like, that's why it's like with any religion, it's like, well, if it's got a positive thing, lovely. It's only the negative side. So you're like, oh, can you stop that, please? But if it's a positive thing, lovely. Yeah, why not?
Yeah,
the world's shitting off, isn't it?
It turns, though, doesn't it? It turns. People turn. Noel Edmonds is the same. It's the same as Noel Edmonds. Noel Edmonds saying, if you write down a thing, that's what the universe will give it to you. Says the man who's got everything. You know, if you start believing in it, it will help. If you're positive, it will definitely help. Because I think the thing is, people, like, most people are negative. Most people don't believe they can do things. So if they have like a force that makes them believe, oh, actually, I can do it because of that magic force, then they'll find they can do it. Because you can do most things if you really set your mind to it.
I've only ever read my horoscopes when I've been dumped. That's the only time. You know, I want to know if it will be okay, please. And then I'm absolutely obsessed with Taurus. Don't relate to any elements of that star sign at all. But at the point of being dumped, absolutely, I'm a bull.
Okay. Well, it's interesting. So I think that is interesting. It's interesting you say that. I think that's it. A lot of it's just talking to people, and I guess especially at the moment. Well, I'm talking to people more than I usually do in lockdown because I don't really go out anymore. So it's Zoom. I find great. You know, I can just talk to people. But I think a lot of people don't. A lot of people aren't really conversing, and they've got no one to talk to really openly about stuff. And I guess, you know, if you're not in a happy relationship, you can't talk to people about, and everyone's got awful secrets they can't talk about. So it's nice to be able to talk to some
exhausting
lady on the
having
internet.
awful secret. Yeah. But that is the thing, isn't it? Like, everyone thinks they're very different and individual, and we all are individual. But the main thing, we've got like main core human needs, which is like, I would like to be heard, and I would like my thing for you to go, that's interesting. That's all we really want. And you've created an entire show.
That's what I am. I'm just a tarot card reader without the tarot cards. I've got you to talk about being bullied at school, and I did
I've not told my therapist that yet. I pay her a lot of money.
Well, let's talk about your podcast, because I listened to a couple of your podcasts. I mean, you got I think two out at the moment. We've done various podcasts over the years, but one of them is a sort of, I mean, not quite self-help. No, the Nobody Panic podcast, which I think was the debrief podcast before. That's the same podcast, right? That just changed.
It is self-help. It was literally created because me and Tessa Coates, who's a comedian, great comedian, she was in my sketch group, Massive Dad. The only reason we didn't have Liz, the other one, was because she was like, I don't want to do it. Like, she's great as well. We were, what, 20, oh, I don't know, very young, 27, 26 or something. And, you know, it was that thing of like, we would like to learn how to be better and not cry all the time. So when we had experts and we basically every week are like, how to be more confident, how to, and now it's interesting because now it's like, it's not interesting, it's all, who cares? But now I'm older and now a lot of, now it's become more, me and Tessa talking to younger people often, although we do have like a really lovely subset of like significantly older, often women who are like, oh, I've never really, you know, I've always wanted to do this, but I haven't. And, but I'm probably not your audience. You're like, yes, you are. Like it's very sweet how, and it makes me feel good that when when someone goes like, oh, I got a new, I left my job and got a new job because of your podcast. And you're like, wow, I did not ever think anyone would listen to it. But now it's become sort of me and Tessa talking about our mistakes that we made in our 20s to try and help. Because it's so hard, and it's especially hard if you're trying... to be honest, it's just always hard when you leave uni and when you... Or you don't, you know, go to uni, doesn't have to be uni. But like, just trying to navigate stuff is really difficult. Yeah. And I wish I had something that had said to me things like... oh, just do it. Like, you know, don't wait for someone to tell you to do it. Just do it. Like, rather than being like, I still do that now with like, because I was a journalist for a long time and I still feel like no one really likes me to be a comedian. No, everyone wants me to just write about paganism all the time. And then I wear these t-shirts. That does not help. But no one gives a shit. Like, just sort of do the thing. And that's a kind of, essentially, the podcast is boiled down to just do the thing and stop being upset because no one cares. You care way more than other people.
Well, I think that you're right. I think the 20s, because you, and even mid to late 20s, you're meant to be growing up and you feel like you're meant to be growing up. And I think it took me a lot longer actually, but you are confused. I wrote a book when I was 40 about still being like a child and not being able to do stuff. And, you know, I really suffered from, it seems weird, and it seems weird you saying it as well, to be fair, but the confidence to do stuff, given that we both of us have got out and done quite a lot of things within, you know, our jobs, I was so shy and I was so confused about relationships and, you know, what you're meant to be doing and friendships. And there was no one to talk to then, you know, unless you did think I'm going to go to a psychiatrist or something, it would have been then, which you just would not have done. So it's kind of great that there are these podcasts there to tell people that this is a shared experience. And I think I think comedy's great when it can do. And this isn't particularly a comedy podcast, I would say, Nobody Panic. It's kind of, it's lighthearted and you're both very funny.
It's a crime drama.
It is. But you're covering subjects and you're being funny about it, but it's not like, hey, it's more about trying to find your way through life's conundrums, which is very, I listened to the procrastinating one, which I'm a very bad procrastinator. I think that was one of the earliest of the Nobody Panic ones. And then Might Delete Later is also your other podcast, which is a nice idea as well about things that you would like to delete and things that you I've listened to. Alistair Green was on it, the recent one, which is...
Oh, I love that one. We get people on to talk about, basically people to talk about like posts, basically to talk about social media essentially, because me and my sister, so my sister is, her name's Gina Martin, and she campaigned to make upskirting illegal. And it's very weird when your younger sister does something so incredible that you can never, it's like, well, literally I could do anything. That is better than anything I would have felt to.
It was amazing, but there's loads of things that confuse me about the generations below me.
Sure.
I mean, that wasn't a crime already is astonishing.
Because it happened, I was with her when the guys did it to her. Yeah. And I, in my head, I always been like, I sort of like confessed, just if anyone doesn't know, my sister got photo taken. We were at a gig, of outdoor festival, and my, and also on the way to the festival, so I dress like a sort of a like a boy in the 90s, and that probably has its own psychological reasons, sure, but Gina does not, and dresses how she would like, and dresses very feminine and has a lovely time. And I'd spent the whole morning anyway on the way to, it was like BST festival or something, and I don't really like festivals anyway, so I'm very like, ugh. Like on the tube, a guy was like, She had a dress on. It was like a short dress. And there was a guy being weird. And I was like, because I'm her older sister, I'm 3 years older. And so I was like a bit like, that guy was being horrible. And then there's someone else who was like being weird. And so I like stood between them. And then we were watching the band. And then these guys were like trying to get her chips. And I'm very good at being like, I have no interest in talking to you. Can you fuck off? And Gina's really sweet and lovely and very open. So she was like, oh yeah, have some chips or whatever. Like, that's fine. And then she saw that they'd taken a photo literally like right up her skirt, and I WhatsApped it to everybody. And they were all just like, sort of being like, ugh. And I, in my head, I just stood very still and cried. But Gina said that I became incredibly violent, which I'm really proud of. But anyway, yeah, so she sort of progressed by doing that. And so her sort of social media is very, she loves social media, and she's very, she uses it for good. I hate social media and I use it to take the piss out of all stuff. So then together, basically what we do is we talk about social media. We talk about our guests, what guests feel about, like what Alistair Green feels about how when a video does really well and he doesn't understand why it's done well and things like that. And it's quite nice, but it has made me hate social media more, if that's even possible. Like,
yeah, I mean, I'm sort of between two stools with social media. I feel like a bit of both for you, what you both feel, yeah. That I hate it. And, you know, it's,
you're very good at it. Like, you really lean into it. Well, I am,
but you know, but it does still get to me, and it's still, there's a lot, anything you do where you put your head above the parapet, which again, as a middle-aged man, I know what I'm getting is like a hundredth of what you would get if you did the same things I'm doing, right? So, but there was a thing this week where and this is sort of funny, and in the end I blocked this guy before it got too far, but it was when Twitter was blocking people or banning people for wishing Trump dead, and then after all the years of them not doing anything about anyone else. So I said, I wish I was dead. Is that outside of the Twitter regulations? And then this guy said, and so, you know, and then immediately I got an email saying, someone's worried about you, that you might be wanting to commit suicide, and we're just checking you're okay, which I thought was like bizarre. I think someone had read that and thought, I meant I wish I was dead.
Oh, God.
And so I said, well, fair play to Twitter for having this thing, but you know, that was a joke. So I said, look, I'm going to delete this because a few people think that I'm trying to commit suicide, but I'm making a joke about the Twitter regulations. And then a guy said, this guy, he retweeted after a block, and this guy thinks it's funny to joke about suicide. I said, no, look, mate, I've deleted it anyway because people misunderstood it a little bit. Most people didn't, but a couple of people did. But this is what it was about. Yeah, no, it wasn't. And then he says, I hope you lose everything that matters to you. And so, like, this guy, I could have said, oh, so you want my children to be killed?
There's a
guy tweeting about one of my children. So it's like, so, like, someone who's claiming, I mean, obviously, it's not about suicide, because I'm saying I wish I was dead isn't necessarily that you want to kill yourself. It's just saying, you know, it's obviously a joke anyway, but it doesn't necessarily mean that. So he's read in his own thing, and then he's so upset about something about that, that he is then wishing my whole life falls apart. So, you know, what I've realised, I have then gotten a couple of tussles with unpleasant groups of people.
Well, you're like, your thing about the International Women's Day, like, yeah, constantly being like, when's International Men's Day? And then replying to everybody. That's like, that's what Twitter is. There's no nuance. There's no, you don't need to, and that's why I find it fascinating. That's why I actually really do get a lot from the podcast that I do, because hearing people, how people act on social media is something like how you personally deal with things and how you
my problem is I can't, well, it's good for that International Women's Day thing, I mean, because I don't let things go right. I should have just let every time I've gone into trouble, you know, I've done things that, you know, I've done dodgy jokes or jokes that have been misinterpreted or whatever, and I've been attacked by feminists, I've been attacked by meninists, I've been attacked by, you know, all sides for jokes. And and my, you know, my wife just said one time, just don't respond to this, because by the minute you respond to it, it becomes a thing, and then it can become a newspaper article, and then it can be something from just one person. So that example, that one person choosing to misunderstand a joke and refusing to accept your explanation of what the joke actually was,
and saying, you were joking about suicide.
Yeah, and refusing to accept your apology and refusing to accept that you deleted it anyway. So I don't know. I don't know what he wanted out of it, but it was up there for about a minute before I went, okay. Look, it's not worth upsetting anyone about this because it's not that good a joke. But yeah, I made a thing about pronouns and saying, you know, just call people by what they want to be called, which has led to so much shit.
I feel terrible because I feel like that, but what's interesting is I'm terrified to say anything because I support people in like other ways, but like I wish I could just say something like that, but you can't because you get so much. But also I was going to say, you have like such a big Twitter following and stuff, and I have a smaller Twitter following. And then whenever I was talking to somebody last night, like something I did, I go viral on occasion. And the first time it ever happened was this year. And then once you go viral once, then it kind of happens a little bit more. And what I find so interesting is, and before everyone's like, oh, she's gonna like bitch about going viral. Oh, how sad for her. But like, you don't realize, but your whole time on Twitter, you don't really think that that's what you're there for, but you sort of are, because every time you do a tweet, you're like, hope that does well, but you don't kind of, but then when you actually go viral, I found I get really hollow and sad because I did, we've got like 150,000 fucking likes, and that is sort of, I guess, what, and I got like 3,000 more followers. You're like, that's sort of what the point of this game I seem to be playing is. But you only realize it when it happens, and you're like, oh, that's kind of what I wanted. And then literally nothing happens. Like, you're like, you get nothing from it. You're just like, oh, well, that happened. And now I have to do another tweet. What am I going to say now? It's so weird. And it's so weird to see, like, with everything else, like, you kind of covet things. And then when you get there, you just.
Yeah, it is a weird thing. I mean, I don't really, because that's what this guy said. Oh, he's just doing this. He's joking about suicide for likes. And I've never even I don't even really know how to look at my life. I generally put this out there thinking this might get off. It's interesting. I think that cupboard thing genuinely became like a little bit of a Twitter sensation.
It did.
And that was like old Twitter. That was old Twitter where, you know, you would get into, it happened to me years ago when I got a sofa stuck in a, you know, trying to take it downstairs. And got it stuck
I remember that.
In the hallway. And that was another good one. It was like Stephen Fry got stuck in the lift, and it was beautiful, and it was everyone just having fun, and you know, people come up with suggestions and you getting angry with their suggestions because obviously you've thought of them, or you know, or they won't work because they don't know what's actually going on. And it's just a really, that's where Twitter can be really good fun. But yeah, I've found the reason I've stopped doing internet, I'm going to stop doing the International Women's Day thing, which was a difficult decision to make, but it was too, you know, it was too much of a mental drain, and I think I'm quite strong on it. But that's this again, this thing where, and then John Ronson just said to me, look, just block anyone who's comes back at you, block them. And it actually, what you realize is it's about 30 people, and it's about 30 people really going to town on you, and you block them all, and suddenly, oh no, it's okay again. That's not true of everything, but of that particular issue, which is so, you know, it's so bizarre out of what's been extrapolated out of one tweet I did. The stuff that people come back to me and tell me that I believe as a result of that one tweet saying Sam Smith should be able to call themselves whatever they want. And it's not that hard. And you call people by whatever they want to be called generally in life. It's not that difficult. Now I'll get into trouble again for saying it again. But, you know, it's so weird to think of that. And then, you know, it does become, you get little threats. And again, I know that as a man, my little threats or
they're still threats.
Someone's going to get him. Yeah, but it gets to you, and you know, you have, and so I think I've got less good at taking it. I think like there's a comedian part of me that kind of enjoy, they're just like hecklers, and International Men's Day and Women's Day thing is just like dealing with some hecklers, but I'm sort of being the heckler as well in that certain circumstance. But yeah, as I've got older, I think it's just, yeah.
It just sort of because then after a while, like, I guess it just is like depressing because it's just like, oh, you, so many people think this. Yeah. What is wrong with you? And I think that kind of, so I, because my, you had Bilal Zafar on here, yeah. And he's a friend of mine, and he's really funny at, he's really good at, like, he winds people up on Twitter, and he finds, especially winds racists up on Twitter.
Yes.
And I sort of found that quite inspirational, because I find when, my thing is that when I do something and then 5 men explain the joke that I've done, yeah. Fine. And I don't, it's, who cares? Like, you've explained the joke. If anything, actually, now we were saying before about Alistair Green didn't know why his video was funny. That wouldn't have worked if he was a woman, because a man would have just explained it to him. That would be fine. But like, I find that so, and I also want to engage in it. Like, and I really want to talk to them. And my sister consistently puts her head above the parapet, says stuff, like really puts herself out there about issues. And I don't, because I'm terrified, and also that's not my vibe. I do stuff quietly, but I don't talk about it. And I did put my head above the parapet for the first time ever this year, when there was like a lot of stuff about the comedy industry and sexism and all that business. And because I'm a journalist as well, that meant that then, like, the Telegraph were like, do you want to write an article about this? And it was like, fine. And I've got people involved in it, fine. But the responses to that, I didn't deal badly with them, but like, I very much wanted to like have like a real long chat with everyone that was like, actually, I think if you get a woman really drunk, specifically to have sex with her and she can't see, I don't think that's a problem. That's just lads. And I'd be like, and then trying to be like, well, oh, like, where's the agency? And you're like, well, if you're doing it specifically, there's so much stuff. And I became very, very tired and very sad over a period of 3 days, and then thought, my God, people do this all the time. And I cannot believe that people do this. And even you doing the International Women's Day thing, yeah, okay, fine, like, you know, you're not a woman, so maybe the stress of it, some people would like say, oh, well, it doesn't affect it, but you were doing that, and it's so depressing to see the constant
it was always the older I've got, the harder it's got, and but also it's just got worse. The people who are bad are worse, and you feel like you can explain it to them, but you can't. So every time that something's been misunderstood, I've attempted to go back and try and go, no, look, this is what I was saying. I wasn't saying that. And it just makes it worse. It absolutely makes it worse. Yeah. And so the best thing you can do...
Block them.
And I really would say this. It's block, or just don't respond, because they will move on to the next thing. None of these people care about it, you know, and none of them... To not be able to see your own... You know, to be upset about what you perceive as a suicide joke and then wish someone to lose everything in their life. That's not a consistent worldview.
Oh, when another person is going, oh, no, it wasn't about that. They're like, yes, it was. Like, how? There is always a drop-off of reality. Yeah. And that's the thing. And also, I think that's, like, very consistent in social media in general, when you're having, there's, like, a drop-off where you're like, oh, and now I've lost you. And you are
clearly... There's no point, you know, the number of people that you'll convince, and it does happen sometimes, you have a chat and you go, oh, look, actually, you know, you've got a point and I've got a point, and maybe we'll meet in the middle. But then you're not going to convince anyone. It's not worth it, I don't think. You know, and I think that's hopefully what will happen with social media, is people will go, look, there's no point in doing this on social media. It's just making things worse. And it's just putting people into tribes. And let's go back to using social media as a silly thing.
It's now destroying democracy. It's not fun anymore.
Yeah.
Now governments and countries are falling. Probably, and it all because Mark Zuckerberg like was quite horny at uni and wanted like women. Is,
but that's what's hilarious about that. It's entirely about, you know, a guy wanting to find a way to hook up with people, which it was a good way. I remember what life was like innocent. Before Facebook, and it was very difficult to hook up with people.
You know
and
what?
After Facebook, it was a bit easier.
Yeah, so I was Facebook 2006. Absolutely loved it. Real fan. And now, what has happened? Look. How long we've talked about it. Good podcast. You can imagine. Might delete later. I'm probably going to very quietly ask you to come on the podcast, because I've...
I think it's a great podcast. So, I mean, we may have just talked about everything we were going to talk on it, but it's a great idea, but it's very lighthearted and fun. And then you ask about what you would, you know, it's just nice. It's nice to ask what you would delete. And it's nice that, how is it working with your sister? I mean, I always find it a bit weird when people are that close to their siblings,
right?
But how is it? How'd you find
it's fine, because between So what, she was 13 when I was 15. So like we basically were going through the terrible puberty time at the sort of same time. So we hated each other. And right. We didn't hate each other, but like we had like a period of time where we were just sort of like not really like, and then about what was nice was then she moved to London when I was having quite a bad time. When you first move to London and you're not like a rich person and you're like, oh, I can't live in Charing Cross. What? Oh, I have to be a waitress too. Oh God. And the rent is so high. So we became very, very good friends. And she is my best friend. And that is weird, but it would be weird if she's my best friend my whole life. We have had periods of time when we haven't been in each other's lives, but now when we're a bit older, what's nice is, yeah, she kind of has all of the characteristics of my parents that I would like, and I have the other ones. And then we both know how to. But also, it's like, well, like our social media. That is the one thing. That's the only argument we've ever had. Like on Christmas Day, I accidentally called her an influencer, and we had a full blown argument. My parents were like, just gonna have some dinner, and she's like, the thing is I'm an activist, and I completely understand now. But that's the one. And so then when we wanted to work together because we get on, and yeah. So we're like, what's the one thing that we could, oh, that, because
let's get back their argument
on the day of the Lord, on the one day of Jesus Christ. We screamed, very religious women, we screamed at each other.
Yeah. was it you that slept under a table when you moved to London?
So I moved to a flat with two friends, and the first flat we lived in had maggots in the drawers, so I couldn't put any clothes in there. And then I would wake up and my landlord would be sat on the end of my bed reading his own post. And I was like, London's wild, like what a wild place. And there was no, they said it was a three bed. It wasn't, it just meant like, oh, three bed as in like move a bed into the living room. So my, like the third housemate was like, I guess I will live in the living room. And then the second flat we lived in was dreadful. That was when it was, I lived, so me and my flatmate had six months in a bedroom, 6 months, and then we would swap. And the swap was you would live underneath the table. And I paid £500 a month to live under a table. Well, and also,
you know, you've got a table.
Look, I've got a table. I have like, it was like, was it a Morrison shelter in the World War II?
It is like,
well, if we're bombed, it's fine. And that was good. But also what was so sad is that when we swapped and I had the bedroom for the, also he picked the fucking flat when I was in Edinburgh doing this vaccine. And then I came back and I'm like, great. Oh, what have you done? And then when I moved into the table, it coincided perfectly with getting dumped. So then I was like dumped under a table. And then we had this little yard outside that was tiny, but had like this, they tried to make it nice by having like bamboo around it. And I remember sitting, I'd gone to Latitude Festival and then like written a review for it for free for a website called like Haha Bonk joke note. And I was sat in this yard and I was like, oh, dumped, but at least I'm a journalist, right? And then I went back in and then three snails had gone from the, and I had three snails on my head.
Yeah.
London. That's London.
It is London. Well, I mean, it was all, oh no, when I moved in the very late 80s, early 90s, you know, you could still come as someone with no money and find somewhere in flat share. And it was, I think our rent was £60 a week each.
Shut up!
And we had a house with, and we didn't even, I slept in a bed. Was we had nice, it was a night. It was
on the South Bank.
It was in Acton. It was in Acton. 32 Hereford Road, if you want to check it out. It was a nice house. Mr. Chowdhury was my landlord. He never sat on the end of my bed. I'd have loved him to. We had a nice house. It was a night, and there was even a little tiny garden at the back. It's changed so much in, you know, and I know you're, because I think were you talking to Andy Peters on a podcast that I was listening to? I think it was something like that. And, you know, you can't now, to come to London to try and make your way in show business or any of these businesses, I mean, ignoring the coronavirus, which makes it a little bit harder. But it's impossible, surely, to for most people who aren't from rich families to do it. So you have to make those, live in those kind of places.
Well, it's just hard. Like, so the journalism industry, I don't know, I can't speak for it now. I can't imagine it's any different. But when I was, so I did a MA at City University, great university, like really that it was the best journalism course in the country, and I'd got into loads of places that were cheaper, but I was like, but that's the best one, and I hadn't gone to Oxford, so I had to take this one. I was like, and then I got like a loan, and what was so there was so much bad about it when I look back, in the sense that during the course, which was 9 months, and I just moved to London, I was told I was not allowed to have a job. I was not allowed to have a job to pay for my rent. So obviously I did, but I was dead. Like I had to cut a very early morning like shorthand class. No one uses shorthand, and I got like reprimanded for it. And I did very badly in my MA. Like really, I've just scraped it. And that was someone being really trying to be really academic my whole life. And it was the first time that I looked around and was like, everyone here doesn't have a job and is living in a flat. How are they doing? They're all rich. Like all of them are rich. And then they all got jobs because they were rich and they had connections. And also they were rich and they were able to then intern for free. Yeah. I had to be a waitress full time. And it's just like anyone trying to do that, like the maths doesn't work. Like, it just doesn't. It took me like two years to get a paid job. Like yeah. It was dreadful, like in journalism. Like it's so sad and it's so hard. But the thing is that you can do it. You just have to, and I get emails being like, how do I be a, or how do I do this? And you just have to do it. Like you just have to
sleep under a table. You just have to sleep under a table with snails on your head.
On the head.
You can eat those snails. Well, that was a great day for you because there's my dinner sorted out. I don't have to pay for dinner today.
Sorted. Crack yeah. shells opened. Mollusks. Like it's actually.
I think that's true though. So if you know, with all these things, you have to really want it. And while I do appreciate the posho people have that advantage, I think. Also, they don't necessarily have the hunger for it, right? So if they get the connections and they get through, fine, they get the job. And, you know, but all of these things are so competitive already, and you need to fight and compete, and you really need to want it. So for me, that was eating baked potatoes and drinking £2 bottles of wine for the first 3 or 4 years I lived in London. Yes. And I thought that was hard, but now it's hard. Well, no, you don't care as well. When you're early 20s, you don't think it's hard. You don't really care. But it is, I think you've got to have that dedication, which clearly you have. You've worked, I mean, you've basically got 5 or 6 jobs and you've just kept working away at them all, haven't you? Which is what you have to do.
Yes.
Let's quickly, I've kept you for a long time.
Sorry,
it's
yes.
been really, no, it's, don't be sorry. It's fascinating talking to you. Let's quickly talk about your Twitch stream because you're on Twitch usually at this time. Is it usually on a Wednesday? Oh, no, it's usually on Thursday.
Thursday,
you're up against Ali and Harry's Twitch of Fun, which is a bold mood on your part.
It's hurt me. It's really hurt me.
Yeah, I'm sure it has. Well, I've been on your show, The Book Club, which is it's an improvised, which I think was the thing I love about Twitch and the experimentation of Twitch, which is, I mean, I'm doing a few things that I was doing already, but the puppet thing is a new thing. I would never have done that without Twitch, and I would never have done it without COVID-19. So thank you very much, COVID-19, for essentially revealing me as an insane maniac. But it's taking up. It's a real punt. I was nervous before doing it because I think it's really literally we're gonna the premise of it is you're a sort of academic character, and we're going to talk about a book that doesn't actually exist, and you have a guest and you improvise the book. And yes. you improvise what happens in it. And that's over an hour, which again, you know, it's, and you've hit the ground running with it, I think. Was it something you were doing anywhere else, or is it just, how did you come up with this idea? And what made you think, I'm going to give this a crack?
This will be great. I suppose I wasn't doing any, I felt like I wasn't, because I'm doing lots of other projects, like creative projects, but not comedy necessarily. And I felt really like, I don't know. I have a very complicated relationship with live. So live comedy. Love it. Also don't. And my friend Bilal Zaffer was on, was doing Twitch and doing loads of stuff. And he basically forced me to do it. And I didn't really want to. but then over like a course of 3 weeks, I was like, what would I do? I really like playing very confident people who are morons. Like I really enjoy that. That's the only kind of, and I did do English literature and I did hate it. And I thought this will be a very good way of exercising that. And I did like a couple of years training. Sounds like over the top, but did like some improv stuff, but it never really, I couldn't really like translate it into actually, you know, gigging or doing anything. I just kind of, because I didn't really want to, I just sort of learned some stuff and I really enjoy it and got a little bit of confidence with it. And I was like, oh, well, the perfect thing would be to get mates on and talk about a book. And so also as well, like my shows that I do, solo shows in Edinburgh, are very like multimedia, like I use slides a lot. And I also like, it's very silly. So it's basically, it's kind of the same thing. Like I do like, I'm not an academic, but I affect the same sort of person, which is like, sure. My last show was like, I'm an expert on social media. I'm also really great at it. And I have no psychological problems because of it. So here are all the reasons that, and then just showing that I have massive psychological problems. But it was all like screens and fucking stuff, which is a nightmare. We just do stand up so much easier. But it was a nice little kind of jump. And it's been so fun. Like it's been really fun, really frightening. But I've really enjoyed doing it. It's really like perked up my week, I have to say.
Good. I find it really interesting. It feels, and the stuff that Bilal's doing as well, but it, and a few other people as well, but it does feel like, you know, it's a slightly new feel of a way to do comedy, but also it's because you've got that, it's like podcasts, I suppose, as well, in a way, but it's just that immediacy of it being filmed and the ability to kind of put in, you know, extra bits and pieces, but it is really, it's a thrilling thing to do, right? I really enjoyed doing Bilal's show and I really enjoyed doing your show. It's really interesting to find out whether you can just make something work from nothing.
And you actually can. Like, I've not had a single, there's not been one single guest who, like, hasn't had anything to say. Like, you have to. So you just make shit up. And it's great. And I think me and Bilal are going to do a show together as well, which is great because I really like working with him. Like, it's really, and I think there's just, to also build, it's like, just, there's the possibilities are essentially limitless until all the celebrities join and then we're now competing with reality TV stars. Sure, but like for now,
well,
it's like,
yeah, we'll see. I mean, I think again it's the same thing, you know, it's like podcasts has taken this, like it's taken, you know, and you've been doing podcasts for a long time already, but I've been doing podcasts for 12 years and it's taken 10 or 11 years before celebrities have started coming into it and realize they can make money out of it now. But I think that just that immediacy and that, you know, you've basically got a TV studio. It's sort of limitless, I think. I really think it is. I think it'd be very interesting. Hope more comedians come into it. That's partly why I wanted to have you on. I think it's important for you, for people to check out other Twitch channels. Yours is Stevie M, but with a 5 instead of an S.
It's such bad, like, it's really difficult to explain. It's hard, but all of it, my Instagram, my Twitter is that, so I have to be that. It's Stevie M, the S is a 5. That's like, unfortunately, TVM, which makes no sense.
And you go out on Thursday, you do your book club on Thursdays at 8 o'clock. Directly in competition. Unbelievable.
I know, arrogant. But I've started doing like a thing on Saturday though, where it's really fun, where I've been like modernizing Shakespearean sonnets. But obviously not, like, silly. Like the last one was like, oh, a snowman is trying to give someone a blowjob. Like that's the vibe. I'm trying to do a bit more like ad hoc stuff. Because obviously everyone here will be like, well, I'll obviously be watching Richard.
Well, it's okay. You can watch me, you can catch up on me, and you can catch up on you.
You
don't have to watch them, but it's fun. I mean, yours is a bit more interactive, I think, probably than mine as well. So I don't really use the interaction too much on Twitch anymore.
I love the chat. I'm obsessed.
It's nice
with
to chat. Yeah. So watch you live. You can catch up with me. Are people able to do that Amazon Prime insane thing with you yet? Have you got the ability to?
I think so.
So people can give you money every month. So give Stevie money every month.
Give me so much money.
She's got snails on it. She's living under a bed.
My flat's fine now.
But your bed has wine all over it. You're going to have to buy a new bed. So,
but
check out all the people on there. There's lots of people and it's worth supporting. Ashley Story's on there, Bilal Zaffa, Ian Lee. I think Alistair's Green's coming on soon as well.
Sue's Kempton as well.
Oh, yes, of course. Yeah. So there's lots of people. Please spread your £5 free Amazon Prime things around if you win Amazon Prime. Look, I'm going to let you go because we've been talking for ages. It's really lovely to talk chat with you. Thank you very much for agreeing to do this. So just more podcasts. Is there anything exciting coming up outside of the world of podcasting?
I'm writing a book.
Wow, good.
Can't talk about it, so pointless. Okay, you can't talk about it. If anything, pointless.
Okay, well, buy my book instead, The Problem with Men. And then when Stevie's
and then buy my book, The Problem with Women, which is coming out now. So,
yeah, which is just not, there's no problem. We're all women are all wonderful. They're all wonderful, and men are all bad. That's what. Read the book. Good. Look, thanks so much for coming on. I'll see you again very soon. I hope. Thank you very much, ladies and gentlemen. The amazing Stevie Martin.
Thank you.
See you next week. I think it's John Cairns next week. I think.
Great.
You have been listening to Rahulastapa with me, Richard Herring, and my guest Stevie Martin. The music is by Bess. Thank you very much. I am indebted to my friend, co-director and producer of this screen, Chris Evans, not that one. I would also like to thank wonderful stuff. Next week's episode 300. Tune in to that. I'm the guest next week. What? You can probably buy that podcast for the moment. Check the blurb for links. This is a Spam Potato. Also a Fuzz. Also a GoFastSubscribe.com production. Why not become a monthly badger? GoFastSubscribe.com/badger. Loads of extras. Loads of extras. Thanks very much for listening. I love you all. Goodbye.
Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com. Flexibility is great. That's why there's yoga. Flexibility for your insurance coverage is great too. That's why there's United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, United Healthcare Insurance Plans offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. One of these plans may be right for you if you're, say, between jobs, coming off your parents' plan, turning a side hustle into a full hustle, or even missed open enrollment. Want more flexibility? Find out more about United Healthcare Insurance Plans at uh1.com.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bollandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
Thanks for listening. Do come and see me on tour. RichardHerring.com/gigs is the easiest way to find out where I'm going. And GoFastSubscribe.com, you can buy books and downloads. And just tell your friends about the podcast. If you can't make it to the tour show, if you don't want to buy any products, then every time you listen to an advert, you're helping us make more podcasts with a very, very tiny micro payment. So thank you very much for that. I love you all. It's lovely to meet you on tour, by the way. Hello to everyone who said hello so far. Do come say hello after the show if enjoyed it, if you want to see me. That'd be nice. You can get a selfie. I don't care. I'm a selfie whore. All right, see you soon.